Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for hanging out with me today, TGIF people. We have made it to the weekend. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Again, thank you very much for chilling with me on this Friday. It is a lovely, sunny, but chilly Friday here in St. Louis. Hope it is nice and bright and sunny wherever you are. Of course, as always, we've got a ton of stuff to get to today. I am loaded for bear today, people. We got a lot to get into, so let's do it. And, you know, I think, well, what else could we, you know, start off the show with but these horrific, heinous, disgusting, evil attacks that took place last Friday in Paris. The latest that I have from Reuters, and I also saw this morning, is that the death toll has gone up. It is now up to 130 people, hundreds of people injured. The latest that I have on this is from Reuters, and this is actually it's from Wednesday. It talks about the raid that went on in a suburb of Paris, Saint-Denis, and I don't know if anybody saw any of the coverage Wednesday night, but it was wall to wall. And apparently this suburb, this neighborhood in Paris, has a large immigrant population. Where those immigrants come from was not specified. That's kind of not specific, but it's a neighborhood kind of where people tend to come and go a lot. They rent apartments and then they leave, and a lot of times they pay their rent in cash, and there's not a big trail. But and since the attacks last Friday, there have been, I think I read this morning, about 800 raids throughout Paris on various sites there. And the latest, again, this is from just this past Wednesday from Reuters, that three people were killed in this early morning raid on Wednesday, and they were targeting the suspected mastermind of these attacks. And this report is from the Paris prosecutor's office. Police have already identified the body of the mastermind. He is in fact dead. He has in fact assumed room temperature. Abdelhamid Abaoud has been killed. And he is the supposed mastermind behind these attacks. And but they have also found two other bodies in the apartment where he was, that was raided. And they are still trying to identify. They've identified one of the bodies actually is a woman, and I'm going to talk about more about that in a minute. But the woman that they have identified. Well, it says here also, again, there's three people total. We have Abdelhamid Abaoud, who is the suspected mastermind, and we have two other people who were in this apartment. There was a handbag, a purse found in the debris of the apartment, and it had a passport in it, and the name on the passport was Hasna Ait Boulassen, and she is reportedly a cousin of Abdelhamid Abaoud. And she was a suicide bomber, female suicide bomber, that blew herself up during the raid. And we're starting to know a little bit more about this woman supposedly who is a suspected suicide bomber and blew herself up during this raid on this apartment where these people were holed up on Wednesday. And, you know, she is not a, well, she's not what you would envision a female suicide bomber who is a radical Islamist extremist. We say those words here at Conservative Cauldron Radio. We are not afraid to say those words. She is not what you would envision someone like that to be. There have been some photos surface on social media, on the internet, some pretty risque, some pretty racy photos of her in a bubble bath wearing nothing but jewelry, which I guess if you're in a bathtub, you would maybe wear nothing but jewelry. But nonetheless, there are some rather risque photos. She reportedly, from people that knew her, drank and smoked, had quite a few male friends, quite a few boyfriends, and her conversion to radical Islam, by all accounts from people that knew her, really has taken place very rapidly. And I think that's another thing that we need to look at and address as a whole is just how long, well, actually not long at all, what a short amount of time that it takes for some of these people to become radicalized. Because by all accounts from people that knew her said that this conversion took place over the course of just a year, just 1 year. And that's, I don't know, that's pretty amazing to me that you could go from a normal, average, everyday person to being someone with these extremist views practically overnight. And more, I'm sure, will come out about many of these raids, including the one that killed the mastermind of this horrific attack. And, you know, I don't know how many people saw this. This would have been earlier this week, Monday, I believe, Monday or Tuesday. I believe it was Monday. The president was in Turkey for the G20 summit conference, and his remarks were about these attacks were really kind of, I don't want to say surprising, maybe jaw-dropping is a better word. He called this a setback. When 130 people are murdered, Mr. President, it's not exactly a setback. This is a president who, to this day, refuses to say the words radical Islamic terrorism. He can't get the words out. He refuses to say it. He will not do it. And his remarks were very very tame, very, well, not what you would expect to hear. French President François Hollande has requested that the United States join in with France and with Russia, with Vladimir Putin, believe it or not, to eradicate this group and wipe them off the face of the earth. And the president's response really was, well, no, I don't think I really want to do that. It was very, very wishy-washy, very, you know, prior to these attacks, a lot of Americans, a lot of conservatives maybe, would have made a lot of fun of the French about how they were always surrendering and how they wouldn't stand up and how, you know, crack a lot of jokes like that. And, nobody's doing that now. Who would have thought that the French, within hours after this attack, practically within a day after this attack, they were attacking various sites in Syria in retaliation for this? And, you know, I've heard more than a few people say who knew that the French had a pair, quite frankly. And, of course, again, Vladimir Putin and Russia, I believe, are now joined in this fight. And but the United States, President Obama, has really not, you know, he's made all of the standard, you know, we stand with our French friends and we are behind them and we will do what we can to help him. He's done all the standard talking points, but in reality, what are we really going to do? What are we really going to do to assist in this? Because this president can't even say the words radical Islamic terrorism. So how do we expect him to actually fight them if he can't even get the words out? And, you know, there are a lot of people who are starting to connect the dots with this president and starting to question his motives, to question his, you know, I could go even more severe and say not only to question his motives, but questioning his loyalties, just questioning his actions and or inactions regarding this war. Because, you know, make no mistake about it, people, whether the president says it or not, the American people know it, I think. We are at war. We are at war with radical Islamic terrorism. Again, we are not afraid to say those words here at Conservative Cauldron Radio. We will say them every day if we have to. Radical Islamic terrorism. We are at war with these people. And I think there are more and more people who are, even liberals and Democrats, who are maybe starting to rethink their positions a little. And there's even, you know, for all of the cheerleading that the mainstream media does and for all of the covering Obama's rear end that they do, Fox's Bill Hemmer, I believe this was Monday, and after the president's speech in Turkey, he, you know, I think a lot of times, and you know, mainstream media aside, reporters are people, and they're going to have their own opinions. And I think sometimes, well, Shep Smith took a lot of heat for some things that he said last week after these attacks. And, you know, reporters are people too, and they're going to have their opinions. And I think, try as they might, a lot of times, maybe it's just they're just not able to contain it. And, you know, the mainstream media usually gets a pass when they do things like this. I haven't heard about any responses or any blowback or anything like that that Fox News's Bill Hemmer might have gotten. But here's a little bit of what he had to say following the president's speech on Monday.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody.
If you were waiting to hear a U.S. president say, "I feel your pain," or if you were waiting to hear a U.S. president say, "It's them or us," that is not what you just heard. President Obama called the attacks here in Paris a setback at one point. He was asked, "Is it time for you to change your strategy?" More or less, he said no. "Have you underestimated the abilities of ISIS?" More or less, he said no. "Do you understand how to defeat ISIS?" His response, this is a variation of the same question. President Obama has made it quite clear in that Q&A that lasted more than 45 minutes that he has accepted there are evils in this world and evils in place like Paris, France, and this is something that we all must face today. It's a reality in which the world we live. If you're at home wondering with your own set of anger and your own set of fears about what could happen next, you are not alone, because that's precisely what you feel here in Paris, France. And if you're waiting for clarification on your feelings through that Q&A, you weren't going to get it. The president's strategy, as stated over the weekend, continues as is. Brett Baer, host of Special.
Bill Hemmer's absolutely right. That's it. This is for Barack Obama. This is the new normal. This is it. And his strategy is not going to change. When he is asked if he even understands this enemy, if he even understands what they're willing to do in order to get what they want, he gets snarky and he gets snippy with reporters and says this is just a variation on the same question and things of that nature. And it's stunning to watch, and it's frightening. It's very frightening. And I think that I think that there is a lot more fear today with the American people than there was a week ago, because we have seen how this president reacts or doesn't react to an attack of this magnitude. And I think we all know, common sense tells us that this could happen anywhere. It just happened to happen in Paris last week, last Friday, while there were people out enjoying their Friday evening, going to a concert, going to a restaurant, just hanging out with their friends on a Friday night. This could happen anywhere. And not only just in the United States, it could happen anywhere else in the world. It could happen anywhere else in the world where freedom and liberty and democracy are front and center for people, where it is first and foremost, where it is the most important thing in their society. And again, it's very stunning to watch. And I don't know, if there's going to be any sort of strategy change, any sort of policy change, I think that this president and this administration is probably going to be dragged kicking and screaming to it. Today, the Republican, I believe it was yesterday or today, or it was yesterday, the House of Representatives voted, a bill passed in the House of Representatives that would increase pressure on the White House to halt the program for all of these Syrian refugees that are coming into the country. Because I think as we all know now at least one of these ISIS attackers in Paris last week had a Syrian passport on him. And by all accounts that he came through Greece with this fake Syrian passport and got into the country, got into France. And I believe right now, today, there are about 17 or 18 governors who have said that they will refuse any Syrian refugees to be allowed into their states. Now, by all accounts, by everyone that I've talked to and things that I've read and seen and heard, that the problem with that is that immigration of any, be it refugee or anything like that, is a federal matter. And therefore, the individual governors of states don't have a whole lot of power regarding this. Whether or not that they can use some sort of 10th Amendment argument for it, that it's a state's rights issue, things like that, I really don't know. I'm not a constitutional lawyer, not a constitutional scholar. So I don't know that is possible. But again, going back to the bill that was passed yesterday in the House of Representatives, this puts increased pressure on the White House to halt programs that are bringing in Syrian refugees. And it's kind of the word on the street really is kind of that it's going to set up a confrontation with the president over the issue, and they're going to be heading into spending battles next month over spending bills and things of that nature. And Representative Mike McCaul, Republican of Texas, and he is also the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, introduced this bill on Wednesday that would beef up the screening process for Syrians and Iraqis who enter the United States as refugees. The House was voted on it today, and it did pass. And it was, by all accounts, it's a pretty fast pace for any legislation, and it really kind of shows how urgent the situation is. That not only did the American people feel the situation is urgent, but apparently, fortunately, that the House of Representatives does too. This bill, of course, received the full support of Speaker of the House Paul Ryan, and it would require that the Director of the FBI, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, and the Director of National Intelligence confirm that each applicant from Syria and Iraq poses no threat. The bill did not go into any specific measures. It just said that officials, quote, shall take all actions necessary for a thorough background check. And shock of shocks, the president said that he would veto this bill. And You know, I would welcome him to veto this bill because it's going to confirm a lot of things. And I'll talk a little bit more about that when I get back. I'm going to take a break here. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today, TGIF. We have got a ton of stuff to get to today, so don't go anywhere. Sit tight. I'll be right back.
I love those times so well. You know I wouldn't change a thing. That's how I learned to sing. That's what I know so well. Yes, I know how to party, but I know how to tell it like it. I want to thank you for the good times and the lessons that I learned these years. Don't you know?
You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble, TGIF. Thank you for hanging with me on this lovely sunny Friday morning. Hope it's nice and bright and sunny out wherever you are. Of course, we're talking about Paris and the horrific ISIS terrorist attacks that took place there last Friday night. And, you know, all of the things that are surrounding these attacks. And, please give me a call if you want to. The number here is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620. And, of course, you can go into the chat room. That is always open, always. But before the break, I was talking about the bill that passed in the House of Representatives this morning that is going to put a little bit more pressure on places like the FBI and the Department of Homeland Security and other departments like that to put a little more scrutiny on people that come from places like Syria and Iraq. And of course, we have seen the constant flow of Syrian refugees coming into Europe. And this has been happening. Well, you know, it hasn't just been happening with Syrian refugees in Europe. I mean, although that is now, and you know, all of the pictures that we see on the internet, pictures on TV, any place that you see this happening, I think the first question that people are asking, at least I know I am, are if these are refugees, how come they're all young men of military age? They're all nobody looks like they're missing a meal. They all look well fed and you know, to the naked eye they look pretty healthy. And you know, there's some women and children sprinkled in this never-ending flow of refugees, I think, just to make it look good. And so I think that's the first question of many people. Why are all these quote unquote refugees young military age men? Because those are not refugees. That is an invasion, pure and simple. And so the House of Representatives this morning passed a bill that would try to make some screening measures, some vetting measures that much more stringent. But the problem that I have, I think, and that a lot of other people have too, is that how are you going to screen these people? You can't call Syria and ask them to punch up Ahmed Mohammed in a computer and find out if he's a member of a terrorist organization or if he is a member of ISIS. You can't do that. There's no database in order to do that. There's no office that you can call in Syria to find out about these people. And so I think that's where people's first, that's their first thing on their minds is, well, how exactly are we going to do that? Well, we can't. And various people, generals and FBI Director James Comey and all sorts of people have said, well, it's not really doable. And, you know, this is a report here from the New York Times about the House of Representatives passing this bill this morning. The president says that he will veto it. And, you know, that's another thing that I have noticed about the president and this refugee situation is that he and I don't know about if anybody else does, too. Please tell me if you do that. When people started saying, no, we don't really want this, it first of all, again, with so many other things like Obamacare and amnesty and anything else, doesn't really seem to matter what the American people want to him. I don't know if that's the fact that he's a lame duck president. He has a year to go, so he just figures, I'll do whatever the hell I want. I don't know if that's what it is, but His reaction to other people's reaction about wanting to let all of these Syrian refugees into the country, not just by what he says, but by what he doesn't say and by his body language. The first word that came to my mind when I heard him and watched him was desperation. He is so desperate, it seems, to get as many of these people into the country as he possibly can. And so that begs the question, why? Why? Is it nothing more than your you know, and I'm being sarcastic here, your charitable nature, wanting all of these people to come in for a better life. Yeah, maybe there's a handful of people that do want to come in here just for a better life, and they have no ties to any terrorist organizations. But we can't know that. There's no way that we can know that. And so the bill has passed this morning, and, of course, President Obama says he will veto it. I welcome his veto because I think it's going to first of all, it's going to be harmless because there was enough votes here, I think, for this bill that any veto can be overridden, which is good. So in this case, I welcome a veto because I think it's going to tell you a lot of things that you need to know about this president and his where national security lies on his list of priorities. And again, this report from the New York Times says that it says that the United States has taken in just over 1,500 Syrian refugees since the start of the conflict in Syria a little over 4 years ago. And the Obama administration has proposed in the next year, in 2016, to accept at least 10,000 new Syrians who would be vetted from the roughly 18,000 referred by the United Nations for resettlement in the United States. Okay, first of all, anytime you have the United Nations involved, I'm suspect. I don't know about anyone else, but I am. And the president took to Twitter on Wednesday and was denouncing the Republican effort to prevent any of these refugees from coming in the country. And he tweeted out, quote, "Slamming the door in the face of refugees would betray our deepest values. That's not who we are, and it's not what we're going to do," unquote. Many Democrats, of course, have argued that turning away all the refugees, argued against turning away all refugees in the name of terrorism. This is from Representative Elliot Engel of New York. He is a top Democrat on the Foreign Affairs. Quote, "Slamming the door in the face of victims of terrorism, I think, would be a betrayal of our values." Kind of seems like that there's some talking points going around here. But again, I think a veto by this president of this bill will pretty much tell you what you need to know. This report kind of ends. It says, when pressed, most Republicans could not specify which aspects of the rigorous refugee vetting program that they found inadequate. Mr. Ryan's staff members cited a Bloomberg poll of 1,002 adults released on Wednesday conducted by Seltzer and Company that found that 53% of those surveyed said the resettlement program should be halted altogether. So the majority of the American people want nothing to do with this. And but there's going to be an attempt, I think, to shove this, once again, shove something else down the throats of the American people. And, you know, I don't know about anybody else, but sometimes I don't know if we're going to make it to 2016. I really don't sometimes. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't, you know. But this president is, and I think we've seen this with other things during the last 7 years that he has been in office, that I think we knew from day one that Barack Obama is first and foremost, even before he's an American, he's an ideologue. He is so, and I think almost now, as I watched and heard things last night, that again, another word that came to my mind was obsessed. He has an obsession with, for lack of a better word, with siding with the enemy. And because he can't, first of all, he can't name who the enemy is. That's the first problem. But it seems like that at every turn that people want to defend this nation, he is against it. And again, I'm no constitutional scholar, but it seems to me that, and I think we all, the one thing that most of us do know about the Constitution is that the primary job of the President of the United States and the federal government is to protect and defend the American people. And I think there are a lot of people who just don't see that happening right now. And I think that there are in his words and actions and the lack of words and actions that you know, I would almost go as far as to say that I think that there's a textbook impeachable offense going on here, because it's becoming increasingly obvious to people that he has no interest in protecting the American people or protecting the American homeland. And I have a report here. This is from Newsmax, and I think everybody knows who Cheryl Atkinson is. She is a former CBS reporter, and she kind of she was the one who kind of blew the whistle on the whole Benghazi situation with Hillary Clinton and you know, everything that went on there. And she told Newsmax TV on Wednesday that her sources say that President Barack Obama does not read intelligence reports from his staff on jihadist groups that he does not consider terrorists. I'm going to read this, and everybody let this sink in for a minute. She goes on to say, "I have talked to people who have worked in the Obama administration who firmly believe he has made up his mind, closed his mind, they say, to their intelligence, that they've tried to bring him about various groups that he does not consider terrorists, even if they are on the U.S. list of designated terrorists." Cheryl Atkinson said this on the Steve Malzberg show on Newsmax TV on Wednesday. She again goes on to say, quote, "He has his own ideas, and there are those who've known him a long time who say this dates back to law school. He does not necessarily listen to the people with whom he disagrees." I think we already know that, too. Atkinson said the sources could not explain Obama's reasoning for his approach to terrorism intelligence. She says, "I've only been told by those who have allegedly attempted to present him or have been in the circle that has attempted to present him with certain intelligence that they said he doesn't want it. He said he doesn't want it or he won't read it in some instances." And I think that's becoming more and more apparent with this president, that he is so wedded to his community organizer liberal ideology that if you have any other view on something other than his, he just tunes it out. He just doesn't want to hear it. And when you're talking about generals, when you're talking about people from the FBI, when you're talking about people from the CIA who are trying to bring you intelligence reports when you are the president of the United States to tell you what is going on the ground, what the people on the ground have learned about these terrorist organizations and these terrorist groups, but you just blow them off and you don't want to hear it. Again, I think that is a textbook example of failing to protect and defend the American people. I think it is a textbook impeachable offense. Somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't know. I just don't see it any other way. And the fact that he would do this, you know, I mean, I think we all learned a long time ago that Barack Obama, I think, has been told all of his life how special he is and that he's the smartest guy in the room. And he firmly believes that he's the smartest guy in the room, even if that room includes generals and FBI employees, CIA employees, people in the know, people who know what's going on. He knows more than they do. And that's it's pathological. I've heard other people use that term as well this week. And not only is it pathological, it's dangerous. And I don't know. I think that, you know, maybe I don't know how you get past someone like that, how you make them listen and how you make them, hear what you want to say. Because I'm looking something up here. This is one of the things that illustrates just how far these people are willing to go and just how dangerous that a president who won't listen to any intelligence reports is. This is on my Facebook page, facebook.com/BeckyNoble. You can go there and see it. And well, it was sent to me by my husband this morning. He received this. And I have a lot of questions about it. please look at it and please let me know what you think about it. If you think it's bogus, please say so. If you think there's something to it, I want to know what people think about this because again, I'm no expert. At the top, it says Homeland Security Warning, and it is dated the 18th of November, which is this past Wednesday. And at the top, there is an address. It says Hunts Point Terminal Produce Cooperative Association, Incorporated. It gives a New York City address in the Bronx. It gives a telephone number and a fax number. And then below that, it says Homeland Security Warning. Again, dated November 18th, to all cooperators. And it says it's from someone named Nick Rodelli, GM. Is he the GM of Hunts Point Terminal Produce Co-op? I don't know. I don't know who this person is. And it says, regarding Department of Homeland Security warning. Subject, U.S. Department of Homeland Security alert. U.S. Department of Homeland Security alert, UPS uniforms, government warning regarding purchase of UPS uniforms. And I'm reading from the body of this. It says, there has been a huge purchase, $32,000 worth, of United Parcel Service, UPS, uniforms on eBay over the last 30 days. This could represent a serious threat as bogus drivers, and in parentheses it says terrorists, can drop off anything to anyone with deadly consequences. If you have any questions, when a UPS driver appears at your door, they should be able to furnish valid ID. Additionally, if someone in a UPS uniform comes to make a drop-off or pick-up, make absolutely sure they are driving a UPS truck. UPS doesn't make deliveries or pickups in anything except a company vehicle. If you have a problem, call your local law enforcement agency right away. Take this seriously. Tell everyone in your office, your family, your friends, etc. Make people aware so that we can prepare and or avoid terrorist attacks on our people. Thank you for your time in reviewing this, and please send to everyone on your list, even if they are a friend or foe. We should all be aware. And it's signed by someone named Kimberly Bush Carr, and underneath that it says Management Program Specialist, U.S. Department of Homeland Security, Bureau of Customs and Border Protection. Now, I have a lot of questions about this. First of all, if this is an official Homeland Security warning, why is it from something called Hunts Point Terminal Produce Cooperative Association in the Bronx? I want to know who the people named here are. Are they Homeland Security employees? Are they government employees? What is their role in this? Who are these people, basically? But in a broad general sense, I think here it illustrates how far these people are willing to go to murder Americans. And the fact that our president would tune out warnings about these people is, you know, he may as well be standing at the southern border or at any entrance to the nation and welcoming them in. It's just that simple. I have another report here. This is from just yesterday that U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter he's actually the only one probably in this administration who has actually come out and said the words that we are at war with the Islamic State. And that's what this report says. The United States is already at war with the Islamic State, Defense Secretary Ashton Carter said, extensive interview airing Thursday amid calls for a stronger response against the threat from the Obama administration. He says he was on Morning Joe on PMSNBC with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. His quote, "We have to defeat ISIL," Carter told MSNBC, "is something that must be defeated." I don't think that anybody would disagree with that. And he says after the attacks that he is, quote, "glad the French are galvanized and joining the fight now." They don't have any choice anymore. They have no choice. And he agrees with French President Francois Hollande that there is a war against ISIS, saying that he believed that Hollande had handled it very well. Carter goes on to say that we have 3,500 people on the ground in Iraq. We're flying air sorties. that are very intense, very effective, that they are going to begin to hit ISIS fuel convoys. So he has actually been the first person to actually say the words, we are, well, he didn't say radical Islamic terrorists, but I guess you have, maybe you can't expect everything all at once. Maybe they have to take little baby steps. But he did say that we are at war with the Islamic State. Whether or not he will be taken by President Obama to the woodshed and told to get his mind right on those comments, that remains to be seen. But so there is somebody who is actually maybe in this administration viewing this as a war. And, you know, it's there needs to be more than just one guy. There needs to be just more than the Secretary of Defense saying we are at war with the Islamic State. You know, they need to say the words. Say the words and it'll set you free. Radical Islamic terrorism. I'm going to take a really quick break here. Or a brick, whichever. And I'm going to come back. I got a really interesting piece here from the Wall Street Journal about just exactly who Donald Trump supporters are and a couple other things to get to before we wrap up today. So sit tight. Don't go anywhere. Got lots more yet to do. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you for hanging out with me today. We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today on this lovely sunny Friday. We are, of course, talking about Paris. We're talking about ISIS. We're talking about President Obama and Well, there's, I'd need another couple hours, you know, if we were going to talk a little bit more about the president and why he does the things he does and why he doesn't do the things he doesn't do. But moving on here, I have a couple of things to get to before we wrap up for the day. This is from the Wall Street Journal. It's from Tuesday of this week. And it's a really great piece talking about just exactly who Donald Trump supporters are. And, you know, I think with the attacks in Paris last week, it really put an even bigger spotlight on immigration, which seems to be Donald Trump's his issue. And of course, people, the biggest surprise of this whole election cycle so far has been not just Donald Trump, but his staying power, that his poll numbers don't really fall a whole lot. And you can imagine, I believe I saw somewhere within the past couple of days that within the first few days after these attacks in Paris, that his numbers jumped up to, I think the highest I saw was 42% of people. And this kind of, it's a recently released survey, a collaboration between the Public Religion Research Institute and the Brookings Institution that, I think Brookings Institution is kind of a liberal think tank, I could be wrong. Don't know anything really about the other outfit, but they did a survey of just exactly who supports Donald Trump. And it says, among Republicans and Republican-leaning independents, 39% of white working class backs Mr. Trump, twice the share of white college-educated voters. 55% of his supporters are white working class, compared with 35% for the rest of the Republican field and only 32% for Dr. Benjamin Carson. Among Mr. Trump's white working class supporters, the demographic group most likely to back him is composed of men 50 to 64 with no more than a high school education. Compared with other groups in the PRRI Brookings survey, these men are the least likely to believe that immigrants strengthen the U.S. and the most likely to believe that illegal immigrants are taking jobs away from American citizens. More than other voters, they are disturbed by the rising prevalence of non-English speakers in the U.S., and many blame Chinese imports and corporate outsourcing for U.S. job losses. The outlook of core Trump supporters also reflects an identity shaped by class and race. These voters are least likely to say that government is looking out for the interests of middle class or of white men, and the most likely to affirm that there is discrimination against these groups. 53% believe that police officers generally treat blacks and other minorities the same as whites. Mr. Trump's working class supporters espouse classic populist sentiments. 7 in 10 say that everyday Americans, not the quote-unquote experts, best understand what the government should do. By a 2-to-1 margin, they believe that politics and elections are controlled by people with money and by big corporations. 44% say that too many people today are afraid to say what they really think, and that is part of the appeal of Donald Trump, is that he throws political correctness out the window. And a comparison of Mr. Trump's core supporters with white college-educated Republicans and Republican-leaning independents highlights the distinctive sentiments of white working-class Americans. Only 30% believe that immigration strengthens the country, compared with 51% of whites with college degrees. Fully 60% of Republican-leaning white working-class voters believe that discrimination against whites has become a big problem, as discrimination against blacks, compared with only 36% of white college-educated voters who are likely to participate in Republican primaries and caucuses. Things like among white working-class voters surveyed, 72% believe that the Confederate flag symbolizes Southern pride rather than racism. Only 45% of white college-educated voters agree. Don't know exactly what that has to do with anything to do with Donald Trump, but it's I think what this illustrates, and maybe, and I'm a little surprised at the Wall Street Journal that maybe it's just a bunch of white rednecks that support Donald Trump, but I don't think that's what it is. I think what it is I think as time goes on and if his staying power continues to be what it is, that he is going to get a lot of the vote from people who were deemed quote Reagan Democrats during the Reagan years, and that they were people who were Democrats, they were self-described Democrats, but they agreed with a lot with what Ronald Reagan had to say. And not that I'm comparing Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump in any way, but it's that same, like the Wall Street Journal just said, the same populist feel that that is going on in Donald Trump's campaign. Very quickly, while we're talking about presidential politics, some new emails have come out about Hillary Clinton. They were Huma Abedin, who is her right-hand woman, and the wife of former disgraced New York Congressman Anthony Weiner. So we can affectionately call her here at Conservative Cauldron Radio, Huma Weiner. But these are some of her emails. And this is from January 26th of 2013, an email correspondence between Huma and another Clinton aide, Monica Hanley, reads. Huma says, quote, "Have you been going over calls with her for tomorrow?" Meaning Hillary Clinton. So she knows that then Indian Prime Minister Manmohan, I'm sure I'm butchering that, Singh, is at 8. Hanley says, quote, "She was in bed for a nap by the time I heard that she had an 8 a.m. call. We'll go over with her." And Huma Abedin's response is, "Very important to do that. She is often confused." Now, keep in mind, we know that Hillary Clinton, I don't even remember the whole story anymore, had a fall, took a tumble, had some sort of head injury while she was Secretary of State. And, you know, I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to diagnose what her condition may or may not be, but could be something that needs to be taken into account and maybe dug into a little bit further. But also, I don't have time to get into it today. We'll get to it next week about, well, about the FCC and net neutrality. And, well, it's the same old story that there is the threat that maybe that, and I'll explain net neutrality better next time, that that they're going to use this, the Obama administration, to regulate websites like Drudge and Fox News and things of that nature. But there's a little teaser for next week. We'll talk about that another time. But very quickly, before I get out of here. Boston, Massachusetts. A Massachusetts agency letting a woman who belongs to the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster wear a colander on her head in her driver's license photo after she cited her religious beliefs. Lowell resident Lindsay Miller said Friday that she, quote, "absolutely loves the history and the story of," wait for it, "Pastafarians," whose website says she has existed, website says has existed in secrecy for hundreds of years and entered the mainstream in 2005. Miller says wearing the spaghetti strainer allows her to express her beliefs like other religions are allowed to do. A spokesman for the Massachusetts Registry of Motor Vehicles says policy does not permit head coverings or hats on license photos, but exceptions are made for religious reasons. Lawyer Patty DeJunis calls Pastafarianism a, quote, "secular religion that uses parody to make its..." Maybe her next photo could be with her tinfoil hat on her head. I don't know. With that, I am out of here. Everyone, thank you so much for joining me today. Please go to conservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Please go to theblacksphere.net. Kevin Jackson, myself, and lots of other hugely talented people with lots of things there for you to read and peruse and consider for your enjoyment. Facebook.com/BeckyNoble and Twitter at PatriotWitch. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today. Have a fabulous, wonderful, and safe Thanksgiving holiday, and I will see you next time. There's a little teaser for you for next week.